I had just decided in my life to follow the Jesus that they were singing about this evening. And it was the first time in my life that I was finally going to embrace the revolutionary teachings of Jesus Christ. I was full of this growing and building emotion and excitement about this brand new life that I was beginning. This spiritual journey that I was embarking upon starting almost 27 years ago. I didn't know all that was going to happen. I didn't know all that the future held, and I didn't know exactly where the journey would take me. I certainly didn't realize how my commitment to Christianity would be tested. I had no idea the things that were coming. But I soon began to realize that I had much to learn about this man, Jesus Christ, and his teachings. I started to read my New Testament for the first time in my life. And there were things that I began to understand and read about that I'd never seen before in my life. I started to realize that Jesus Christ's life was primarily about loving other people, and yet he got very little love in return. I was surprised by that. I never really grasped that before. Not only did very few people thank him for what he did for them, but his own family, his own family thought that Jesus was insane. There's a passage in the Bible that talks about Jesus. He's with his disciples, and he's so busy, so many people are coming to him to get well, that it says he couldn't even take time out for a meal, and his family thought he lost his mind. And they were trying to come and rescue Jesus, as it were, and sort of get him committed somewhere so he could get the help that they perceived he needed. Not only did I begin to realize that Jesus was misunderstood, but I also began to realize that Jesus was greatly mistreated. That he was hated. This man who loved people, who healed people, did all these wonderful things for people, was so mistreated, tortured, beaten, whipped, received no justice, and then crucified. And I think of all the people that I've known in my life, and even as I look at my own life and I think about some of the injustices, and all of us in this room have experienced them in our life at some time, I look back and I think, my goodness, Lord, I don't know anybody who is as mistreated as you were. And I began to realize for the first time in my life that God wanted to teach me things. That God was going to put me on a journey. If I was going to try to follow Christ, that I was going to come up against things that I didn't like. And what I'd like to do this evening is pass on to you a little bit of what I discovered and what I learned over the last 27 years, especially dealing with those crazy relatives. I think dealing with family is one of the most difficult things to do as a Christian. At least it has been for me. It may not be for you. God may have something different for you. But I have a feeling that probably a lot of us will be able to relate to some of the things I want to share with you tonight. And one of the first things that God sort of confronted me with was my relationship to parents, particularly my parents. I came across this verse in the Bible, and Jesus said this: honor your father and mother, for this is the first command with a promise. The promise is that you may live a long and prosperous life, and that it may go well with you. Now, you may not know this. Someone told me tonight in the dim lights of the stage, I look 25. I think they were being kind to me. I am a product of the 60s. I came of age in the 60s. And one of the things you have to realize about us enlightened people of the 60s was that the last thing that you're going to do is honor and respect your parents, who are uncool, out of step with reality, obsolete, and should be questioned at every turn. So needless to say, I had a very strained relationship with my parents. If I was honest, I was a very difficult teenager. And I started to follow Christ just before my 20th birthday. I had made my parents' lives, frankly, if I, you know, again, if I'm honest, really miserable. I have a picture of my mother and father and myself at my graduation. I'm the only one smiling. I had brought an awful lot of sadness and sorrow into our home through my words, my actions, and my behavior. And for the first time in my life, God began speaking to me about changes that He wanted to bring about in my life. I started to ask myself the question, I wonder how I would react to a roommate if I had to live with me. Did you ever think about that before? It just started to soak in my mind, and I just started to ask myself, you know, what would I do if someone swore at me every day? If after I'd fixed their meal and washed their clothes and made their bed, I just treated them like they were dirt. Only fight I ever got into, I got into it with my father. I was 18, and he asked me to vacuum my room, and I told him where to go. And we were about nose to nose. Wasn't a very smart thing to do, but I wasn't very smart. My father, you know, I've told you this before, I won't get into great detail, but used to be a boxer. So my father, he would never hit us. But my father knew that I needed some humbling. But I thought I could take my dad at this point in my life. Before I could spit, I was on my back, held in a hold. I couldn't move. I was humiliated. I was angry. And then when I got up, swearing at him, he told me, you have a choice. You either change or get out of the house, because I can't have five children. I was the oldest of six around your pathetic example. Personally, I don't know that my parents ever felt honored or respected once I became a teenager. It was easy for me, you know, to see all my parents' faults. We all can. And some of them have, you know, really, really bad faults. So the first thing that God brought me to in this new Christianity was an awareness that, you know, I may have saw all their idiosyncrasies and all the craziness in them, but there's a lot of craziness in me. So I got up one Sunday morning. It was actually about a day or two after I had made this decision to follow Christ. I had been hitchhiking. I hadn't been living at home for some time, and I had just come back. And I was living at home, had a job. I wasn't around much. And I could still see the sadness in my mother's eyes and the tears that I often heard her cry in her bedroom because of her oldest son. And I got up one Sunday morning. It's probably 5:30. I didn't get up that early in those days. And I got dressed up. I hadn't been to church with my mom, and my dad quit going years ago, but I hadn't gone in, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. So I got up and I went up to the kitchen table. My mother was always the first one up. She always come to the kitchen, her bathrobe, make her coffee. And I wanted to catch her alone. I didn't want anyone else to be around because I wanted this to be a special moment for my mom. she stood in the doorway of the kitchen and her mouth kind of dropped and was like, "Mark, what's going on?" And I, to be honest, I couldn't hold back the tears. And I, through my tears, I said, "Mommy, would you please sit down? I need to talk with you." I don't know if you know the story of the prodigal son, but that was me. And I said, "Mom," I said, I got some things I need to tell you. I said, "First of all, I want to let you know that your prayers have been answered. I know you've been praying for 19 years for me. And the last night, I gave my life to Christ. And I'm committed myself to follow His teachings. And first thing that He made me realize, Mom, was that I don't deserve to be your son. I recognize that I made your life extremely difficult. That I've been unruly and I've been very disrespectful. And really, to be quite honest, I tortured my mother as much with my behavior and my words as if I'd tied her up and put cigarette burns on her arm. To my mother emotionally, that's how profound the hurt was that I had done to her. I knew I could never repay it. I could never make it up. But I knew that God had laid on my heart that I needed to start by an apology. And then from that moment on, I began to practice in every way that I could, honoring and respecting my parents, even though by now my father, he had really, really gone the opposite way. And he was debating whether to leave my mom or stay, or leave my mom or stay. And it was very difficult in the home for that reason. But I just began to ask God, "God, help me. Help me to honor my father and mother. If my Christianity, Lord, can't impact my home, my life right here, then what good is it? Lord, help me to live the kind of life you lived. I wanted that more than anything else in the world. I still do today." I began to mow the grass without being asked. I began to clean the house without being asked. I began to go run errands for my mother without being asked. My relation with my siblings changed. I went to all of them. I was a terrible tease. I was a brutal tease, actually. Sometimes I would tease them to the point of tears. One by one, I went to all of my family members, including my father, and I told them the same thing I told my mother. To my siblings, I held up my car keys and I said, "If any of you ever need to use my car, there are the keys. Just come and ask me. You can use my car. If any of you want to wear my clothes," I had more money than all my brothers and sisters because I worked, mostly skipped school and worked. They said, "You can use my clothes. And then there's all my albums. And you won't listen to any of them. You can use them anytime you want." Slowly but surely, God began to change. Little did I realize what was coming in my life. About a year later, I met the girl of my dreams, the girl that I knew the moment I met her, I would marry her. And about 8 months into our relationship, I proposed, and of course I knew that we needed to talk to her parents as well. So we went to see her parents. I'll never forget pulling up into that gorgeous driveway, this house like I had never seen, with three decks, a curved driveway, and a brand new Buick Riviera parked in the garage that had just been driven off the showroom floor. And I walked in with Kathy through that garage, not knowing what was coming, but for some odd reason, and I kid you not, there was one phrase that kept going over and over in my mind. You saw tonight the picture of Jesus hanging on that cross and the thorns on his head. There's a verse in Isaiah 53, and it says, "As a lamb led before his shearers, he stood dumb. As a lamb led to slaughter, he was dumb." In other words, they led Jesus to the cross. He didn't scream about his rights. He didn't yell. He didn't throw a fit. He just put the cross on his back, and he walked that road to Calvary. And I can't explain, well, once it all unfolded, I knew why, but I didn't know. And this verse, I hadn't read it in months, kept going through. As a lamb led to slaughter, he was dumb. As a lamb led to slaughter, he was silent. And I could not help but think, there must be something in this for me. God must be trying to say something to me. And I walked into that living room. And again, it was the fanciest house I'd ever been in. And the first thing that was said to us was, there must be some damn reason you kept us up this late. And I knew, I am headed in to hell. The crucible is where God is going to test me. Well, we began the discussion. It didn't go very far until finally I brought up that we'd like to talk to them about getting married. And when I said that, they laughed. I mean, they really laughed. And then the mother looked straight at me and said, "You must be joking. You think that we would let our daughter marry someone like you? Look at you. How much money do you have? How much money do you have in the bank? And how much are you planning on making in your lifetime?" My fiance is sitting on the couch crying, and her mother begins to taunt her. "And look at you. I was happy when your father proposed to me. You don't look happy. This can't be right." Now there's two marks here, you have to understand. And I'm going to get to that in a little bit, but the movie that just came out this weekend, that's the other mark. I am the Hulk in person. My temperament, my personality is every bit as fiery as the movie you're going to see. That's one of the reasons that my parents' lives were so difficult. If I lost a game, I broke things. If my brothers got the best of me, I get extremely angry. And I was sitting in this basement, this family room, and I'm thinking to myself, "Jesus, help me. Jesus, help me. Jesus, help me." Here's a guy who just a year earlier is a hippie, and hippies do not respect parents. This is one of the reasons why. That's a prime example. Why? They're judging me. I'm already condemned. With no trial, no opportunity to give my side of the story. And needless to say, I was devastated, but I was more devastated for Kathy. But something inside of me just kept telling me, "Shut up. Mark, just shut up. Just be quiet. Just keep your mouth. Just take it, Mark. Turn the other cheek." Wow. It was a strong voice. I wasn't used to that voice, you know. I wasn't used to hearing that. Just turn the other cheek. Just turn the other cheek. The next thing I know, it was 1 a.m. and they had been laying into us for quite a while. I hadn't really said anything. And then they said, "Well, you know what? You can't stay overnight here. We've driven 10 hours to get to this place. You can't stay here because we don't know you, and you might get up in the middle of the night and steal us blind. So you got to go down the street to the motel." It was the first time in my life, this is no lie, first time in my life that I was up all night crying. It's happened since then, but that was the first time. First time I started to get maybe just a little picture in my mind of what it must have been like to be Jesus. And not that my suffering was nearly as great, it wasn't, but to be so misunderstood and so misjudged by someone you would have thought, you know, "This is your daughter. She's a wonderful girl. Don't you trust her? You think you raised an idiot?" All that's going through my mind, you see. And so I went in the bathroom because I was embarrassed. I didn't want anybody to hear me. I took a pillow and I stuck my face in the pillow, sort of. You know, because if you stick it, you'll die, you know, you suffocate. So I wasn't quite in the pillow the whole way. And I had my Bible there, and it's the first time I read the whole book of Psalms. 150 chapters of Psalms. And I read one after another, and I started to realize how much suffering there was in this Christianity stuff. And then there was a time. Well, we waited and we waited and we waited for Kathy's parents kept her there. They wouldn't let her come with me back to school. I paid for her schooling. It was finals week. They wouldn't let her come back and take her finals. They basically held her prisoner in their home. I drove all the way back to Iowa on my own, crying most of the way, barely seeing the road, wondering what in the world just happened to me. What's happening to us? And what's Kathy going to think? You see, because the next morning, her father showed up at the door at 6 a.m., motel, pounding on the door. When I opened the door, the veins in his neck were sticking out. He said a few very choice words and said, "Get out of this town. Don't ever come back. I don't want to see your face again." I had no idea what to do except get in the car. I didn't know where Kathy was staying. It was at night when they took me, and I knew they wouldn't let her answer the phone. I knew this was worse than I could possibly imagine. I got home, tried to get one of her roommates to call for 3 days that I could even get through to her. And I had a feeling all the way when I drove home that her father was going to go and say, "You know what, I went to get Mark this morning so we could talk some more like I said last night we'd do. And you know what, he skipped town. He couldn't take the heat." Sure enough, I found out that's exactly what they told her. And I began to imagine what that was like playing on Kathy's mind over and over and over. She's sitting there alone, abandoned, and I'm gone. I have no any choice. For the next 2.5 years, we waited and we waited and we waited. We waited. We did the things we thought would honor them, things they asked us to do. And then we found out that they began to tell all the relatives, and Kathy has a big family and the relatives are really close, that Mark and Kathy are in a cult. He's a dropout. He did drugs, never did. He was in jail, never was. And when we finally got married, they said they'd come. Well, they said they'd come 2 days before the wedding. They called and said, "Well, we're not coming." So we canceled the wedding 2 days before the wedding. We called 500 guests. Canceled the wedding. 2 months later, they finally said, "Look, just get on with your lives. We're not coming." None of her relatives came either, because I was a drug addict and had a police record, you see. In all the years in our relationship with Kathy's parents, we never brought it up, never yelled at them, never wrote them a letter, gave them a piece of our mind. We just began to pray for them. And I have a few other stories I want to share with you tonight. Before I do, I want to share with you two of the passages in the Bible that impacted my life maybe as much as any other in the Scripture in relationship to the human race, in relationship to the crazy people that come our way, and especially relatives. It's in Romans chapter 12 and verse 14. "If people persecute you because you are a Christian, don't curse them, but pray that God will bless them. When others are happy, be happy with them. If they are sad, share their sorrow. Live in harmony with each other, but don't try to act important. Enjoy the company of ordinary people. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Do things in such a noble way that everyone can see that you are honorable. Do your part to live in peace with everyone as much as is possible. Dear friends, never avenge yourself. Leave that to God, for it is written, 'I will take vengeance. I will repay those who deserve it,' says the Lord. Instead, do what the Scripture says. If your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they're thirsty, give them something to drink, and they will be ashamed of what they have done to you. Don't let evil get the best of you, but conquer evil by doing good." This was revolutionary to me. I was stunned by this because, and I mean this, really, I mean this, the Hulk is my personality. I mean, I wanted to tear people limb from limb. I definitely wanted to give them a piece of my mind. But to love my enemies, to do good to the family members that have hurt me and mistreated me and misjudged me and abused me? Lord, you know, you must be mistaken. I'd have to read that again. And then to top it all off, I come to this verse. In Matthew 5, verse 5, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." One day I was reading and I thought, meek. Meek. What the world does meek mean? You know what I discovered? I looked it up and here's what it said. To endure injury without resentment and with great patience. Oh God. You know, to be honest, I kind of wanted to like go, you know, I don't think that page was supposed to be in the Bible. I just kind of tear it out. You know, Jesus, I don't think, of course, see, I couldn't get around the fact that Jesus lived it. I couldn't get around that. It was like, I wanted to make excuses. I want to go, but Lord, you don't know what this is like. And then, you know, geez, how whipped, beaten, scourged, nailed on a cross, and never once did he curse at anybody doing it to him. When his brothers made fun of him, he didn't make fun of them back. When people laughed at him, he asked his Father to forgive them. So I began to realize, you know what, Father, if my Christianity means anything, if you mean anything to me, then I have got to put this into practice with these relatives. 5 years later, Kathy's parents invited us to come with them on a little vacation. I didn't have much money, really didn't have the time off from work. I had no vacation, so I took my own time off without pay, and we drove all the way to Arkansas, spent a little week with them in their timeshare on this golf course. I do not like to golf, in Fayetteville, Arkansas, in the Ozarks. First time Kathy's mother had ever hugged me was then. My daughter was 5, my little boy was 4. And, you know, my strategy when I would go be with Kathy's parents was to listen. I just listened to her mom. Her mom would talk about her new things and all the money she spent, and that was what she talked about. She never asked, so how are you, Mark? And, well, what are you and Kathy doing these days? Never, ever, never, nothing, never. Never a question like that, ever. I'm not joking. Never, never came up. And to be honest, the kids wouldn't even sit in the living room. They would go out, hang out with Dad, because she was always left alone because no one wanted to be around her. Finally, the week came to an end, and we were in our condo unit, and we were saying goodbye, and I really appreciated the fact that they had us down, and I was trying to show that, and little Celeste was sitting on her lap, and she looked at Celeste and said, well, sweetheart, you're going to be starting kindergarten next year, aren't you? And this didn't plan on this, and Celeste didn't know any better, but she said, well, Grandma, I think my mommy's going to teach me at home. I'm going to be homeschooled. Her mother stood up, dropped Celeste on the floor, and flew into a rage. Called my wife everything you can imagine. Made a bunch of very profound statements and walked out of the room. And that was the closest I ever got. I was like, you know, you just, oh, God, help me right now. I want to say something so bad. And her father was sitting there, kind of a blank stare on his face. And I really wanted to say thank you because they had, you know, provided the condo for us. We drove back. My wife cried all the way home for 8 hours. 2 weeks later, we received an envelope in the mail. It said, don't ever come down here again. Your grandmother agrees if you can't live your life like normal people, we don't want anything to do with you. And after all we've tried to do for you, and I couldn't believe what I was reading. Like, all you tried to do for us, you've done nothing for us. We're cutting you out of our will and blah, 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 blah. And there was a time I was with my brother. It was Thanksgiving at my sister's house. All the kids were around. My kids were all in karate. And my brother wanted to see a few things, so I was showing him some of the things they were learning. I didn't touch him, didn't hit him, nothing like that. But for whatever reason, out of the blue, we're standing like he's there and I'm here, and I was showing him one of these kicks the kids was learning. The next thing I knew, he flew across the room, grabbed me, slammed me against this column. I thought it, you know, split my back, but of course it didn't. And pain just shot up down my back, and I was like dumbfounded. He was just enraged, and I'm thinking, what just happened, man? And I could barely stand up, and the kids are like, and then he says, Mom, let's get out of here, and he leaves. He's my youngest brother, and I love him. I have no idea why that happened. Then there was the time my brother, closest brother, after my youngest son jumped into a fire escape hole from an egress window in the house that our landlady just dug, put a hairline fracture in his in his little shin bone, had to get a cast. We had a family reunion 2 weeks later. And 3 weeks after the family reunion, my brother, who's now a psychologist, wrote a long letter to me and said, "Mark, I know everyone else is afraid to approach you, but I'm not. You broke your son's leg. You need help." And I'm like, I don't believe he just wrote this to me. And then there's the time 6 months ago, after my son got married, my other brother wrote me a letter and accused me of being worldly and sinful and not caring about my mother, and because of some things that he felt were done wrong at the wedding. Well, he didn't even come. He has no idea that every month for years I send my mom $100. But I'm the only one that does. And these principles have revolutionized my life, because you see, you know what's happened? Kathy's father and mother got divorced. It was 20 years I was waiting for this, not for them to get divorced, but for God to open their eyes, because we've been praying for them that long and doing good to them that long. And it was 5 years ago that he called me on the phone after meeting a new woman who knows Christ and asked me if I would perform the wedding, and apologized to me on the phone in tears and said, "Mark, greatest regret I have in my life is how I treated you and Kathy. I feel so ashamed." Never once in those 20 years did I ever say anything to him about it, did I ever bring it up. In fact, let me tell you how empowering it was to Doug. That's Kathy's father. When his wife left him, she left him for another man. She was sleeping with that other man in his bed, their bed, when he was on his business trips. When he found out, he was enraged. He wanted to kill the guy. 3 weeks later, he came to visit Kathy and I. They went out together alone for the first time, 21 years. She'd been alone with her father, had an alone conversation with her dad. And all he wanted to talk about was God. Kathy was just dumbfounded. Just all he wanted to talk about was Christ. And as they were driving home, he said, "You know, Kathy," he said, "I've been thinking a lot about what I did to you and your mom and I did to you." And he said, "You know something? The greatest lesson I ever learned in my life, I learned from you, and I'm going to do it to your mother." And Kathy said, "Daddy, what are you talking about?" He said, "The lesson of forgiveness." This is 3 weeks after she's left him for this man. He said, "You and Mark, after all we put you through, you forgave us. You never held it against us. And you know what? I'm going to do that to your mother." And that man healed faster than anyone I've ever seen in my life. I like to close with just a few little lessons that God has impressed upon me over the years that I think could be helpful to you. One of the most important lessons I learned was not to internalize my family's taunts and accusations or humiliations, because I am not what they say I am. It's really easy when parents or friends or particularly family members say things to you and they know how to push your buttons, to internalize them and to somehow think that, you know, I am this person, and we feel icky and we feel awful. But I began to learn how to be strong around them. In fact, I began to realize they had no power over me at all, but that I was actually stronger than all of them. I also began to realize that honoring them and respecting them didn't mean I had to do everything they told me they thought I should do. And I learned to pick and I learned to choose. And I learned that I could still be my own person and walk with God, but that they were broken down human beings, just like the rest of the world. And they needed the same Jesus that I had. I learned not to be afraid of being assertive and to create healthy boundaries. Sometimes we're afraid. We cower. And no need to cower. You don't have to cower. I was talking with a woman who called me one time. She grew up in a very abusive family. In fact, she hadn't seen her father in years and years and years and years. But her mother would call her on the phone. Even after this lady had children, she'd call her on the phone every day. She lives in the cities here. And yell at her. tell her she was an awful mother and she was a whore and she was this, she was that. And this woman, this lady that called me, is a Christian. She really wanted to show love to her mother, but she said, Mark, she called me in tears. She says, I just don't know what to do, Mark. I want to be Christian, but this has been going on for months. She said, do you have any advice? I said, sure I do. First of all, I said, I want to assure you, you're none of the things your mother's told you. You're one of the most extraordinary women that I've ever known. Her son just recently called me from Afghanistan. He's serving there. She just has a wonderful, beautiful family. I said, the next time your mother does that, here's what I want you to do. I want you to interrupt her firmly. I want you to say, Mom, get her attention. And then tell her, Mom, I want you to know something. I love you and I care about you. But from now on, if you talk to me this way on the phone, I will hang up the phone on you. So next time her mother called, she began the same pattern. My friend interrupted her. She wouldn't listen, but she interrupted again. And she told her that, and her mother started calling her name. She just hung up the phone. The next day, mother called. She answered lovingly. The mother started. She hung up the phone. This time, she didn't even warn her. After a month of hanging up the phone, her mother realized she was serious, and her mother began to change her tone. I learned not to avenge myself, but to let God do it. I learned that the meek person really does win. Not the strong, not the cruel, not the mean, not the domineering, not the fighters, not the haters, not those who seek revenge. But I learned that the meek win. In God's kingdom, the meek win. And He will see to it that in His time, you win. I discovered that having a forgiving heart really made me feel healthier and stronger and more empowered, even if my relatives never acknowledged their wrongs towards me or their mistreatment of me. I really did. Whether they ever said they were sorry or not, just knowing I could lay on my bed at night and go, you know what, Lord, I just ask you right now to bless them. And you know what, Lord, I just let it go. They're foolish. They're sinful people. They're ignorant people. They're proud people. Lord, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. It empowered me. See, I didn't really know if Jesus, you know, if He meant what He said, to forgive your enemies, to love your enemies. I grew up hating. I grew up getting picked on in school all the time. And I used to dream. I used to dream of taking my trumpet case to the kid next to me who used to bully me on the football field, in gym class, and in band. And as we're walking out to the bus, turning and ramming the trumpet case in his groin, and then bringing the trumpet case up under his chin, busting it open, and then spitting in his face. That was a recurring dream I had over and over and over again. Hate is what I was used to. But God began to work this miracle in my life. And lastly, I began to realize that the way to beat evil, the evil that was trying to destroy me, was to do some kind of good to the person through whom the evil was coming. When Jesus said in Romans, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil by doing good. I read that and I thought, God, you know, can that really work? So I began to try it. Now, I really mean this. I don't mean it the way it sounds, but I began to try it in my marriage. When evil things would come out of my wife's mouth or when mean things were said and I would want to snap back and I would want to throw things back, I would go down in the basement and start to iron clothes. Because, you see, that benefited my wife. That's what she usually did. So I would go down and do that. And then I would fold some towels and I would throw in some laundry. When it came to friends, and I could stand up here tonight for another hour, I won't. And tell you story after story after story of how this principle revolutionized my life and my dealings with family members who would belittle me and mistreat me. And yet, I would return kindness instead. And in the end, it won. I don't know what kind of things you maybe are dealing with, but I'm sure some of you here tonight can relate to something that we've talked about. Maybe you've never, and I really mean this, even if you're 40, if you're 30, if you're 25, if you're not living at home anymore, it's easy to point a finger to parents. I know that. I did it for years. And they have their faults. Here's all God's asking us to do. As much as it's up to you, not up to them, but up to you, up to me, be at peace with people. Blessed are the peacemakers, Jesus said. Maybe you've never apologized to the things you've put your parents through. That might be a good place to start. Maybe a letter. Maybe a letter that can articulate some of the things as you begin to recognize, Mom and Dad, if I had to live with a kid like that, wow, I just want you to know that I'd like you to forgive me for the things I said to you, the things I put you through. Maybe there's relatives that have been, maybe it's siblings. Someone in your life that you know, I really hate them. I'd encourage you tonight, start to pray for them. Just start, God, I don't feel like doing this, but you asked me, and so I want to ask you to bless them. Bless their life. Bless them. I pray they come to know you and that they know your love and that you just bring good into their life. Whatever it is, if you start, God will give you the strength to finish. And you'd be amazed in time of what happens. Let's pray. Next week, we're going to talk about, finish this series on crazy people, and we're going to talk about how to handle the crazy person inside of you. Crazy person that lives inside of you and me. Lord, I thank you tonight for your teachings. I thank you for your word. I thank you that you're in the business of changing a life. And I realize, Lord, tonight it's warm in this auditorium and people are probably hot. I'm hot. The lights are hot. But you know, Lord, a lot of us, we have to deal with some tough things in our lives. Our families aren't, many of them are just not the greatest families in the world. They aren't super supportive and loving and affirming and positive. They're often critical and mean-spirited and hateful. And they misjudge us and they accuse us of things. And Lord, I know for me, and I know there are many here tonight, if not every person, we really want to live out the teachings of Jesus Christ. We ask you tonight for your help. We pray collectively tonight for our family members, Lord, that you'd bless their lives, that you would touch them, that you would speak to them, that you would draw them to you, and that you would help us to do good to the people who hurt us. In Jesus' name.